Are you waiting for me to say something funny?
I don't know.
See,
usually,
just staring at me.
Usually that's what you do.
Oh.
Come on. Like come funny. On. Make joke. I'm poking you. They can't see that.
Yeah. It's annoying. Like you. Here's a joke. Pain pills make you sleepy.
You want to hear my kid's favorite knock knock joke?
Yeah.
They made this up.
Oh, good. Let's hear it.
Knock knock.
Who's there?
Poopy.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's not bad. Welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for January 10th, 2020. This is Mike Minotti. I can't believe 2020 is so weird. Mike Minotti joined by my brother AJ.
As long as you don't say 2020.
I'm not. I told you.
I know.
Like, I was all about 2019, 2002, and then like now I'm like 2020.
I did 2002, but I didn't do 2012.
That's my thing. So it was like 2009. Like, it wasn't 2009. So like 2009, I couldn't just like suddenly be like 2010. I just couldn't do it for a while.
You need another decade.
Right. But yeah, 2020. I'm like, that makes sense. Plus, it's like 2020 vision, you know?
Yeah. We already have that in our heads.
Yes, exactly. I mean, yeah, it's a thing. 2021. So yeah, it's great.
Well, we're not talking about 2020 today.
God, it's not like going to be that long until it's 2030.
We are. You've seen this probably on Facebook. We are as close to 2050 as we are to 1990.
Ugh, don't like that. All right. Woot.
Yay.
So I assume we'll talk a little about some of this Pokemon news, and then I think what were we doing, a game of the decade discussion? Is that what's
happening? Yeah, of sorts. A completely futile endeavor, but we'll give it a shot.
All right, we'll have fun. We'll just basically talk about the games we liked the most from the last decade.
Yeah.
Which was the Exploding Barrels first full decade.
Yeah. We're in our third decade. That's impressive. Yeah,
right? I didn't think the show was going to make it to the 20s, that's for sure. And here we are. All right, then. So we had that Direct this morning. It was kind of weird because everybody thought there would be a Nintendo Direct, and then it was like
a Pokemon Direct.
Which is strange. It seemed like Pokemon was kind of spoken for recently.
You thought.
Yeah, so it opens up with... I was almost not disappointed, but like... When I say 2006, in my mind, I'm like, I don't know. I guess that's when Diamond and Pearl came out.
I don't know.
I was like, oh, maybe it's the Diamond and Pearl remakes. And then it wasn't. It was the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, the remake of the original one.
I've never played that game. Wasn't it like a Pokemon version of another established game?
Yeah, Mystery Dungeon. You probably know Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon.
Oh, yes.
Sheeran the Wanderers and the
Mystery Dungeon. Oh, that's the one. Yeah.
I mean, they're fun games.
Yeah, and there's a demo, so we could try it. I'll get to it.
As you can imagine, like, the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon version is probably a little easier.
You don't say.
And I've actually never tried any of them. I played the Chocobo one a bit. I think I played one this Sheeran the Wanderer. They're fun.
I feel like there was a time everyone one up was all about Sheeran the Wanderer.
Yeah.
All the boards and everyone was playing it.
But is it because this is another thing that would have like so obviously have been a 3DS game or something not too long ago, and now that's just coming to Switch.
Right.
So I mean, it's interesting. What's neat too? Like last time there was like a blue and red version of it.
Well, because it was cross generation. It was GBA and DS.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it came out like at a time when it made sense to put on both systems. That's
right.
Why that's why there were two versions. Now it's just the one.
Yeah, and so in the original game, like you play as a Pokemon, but they would do like a personality test to like assign you a Pokemon, which like
not everyone's Pikachu.
No, I don't think so. Which doesn't really make sense. Like some people are like. So it's like, oh, if you're like happy all the time, you're a Squirtle. Like, why? Why is Squirtle so happy? You know,
well, Squirtles are always happy.
Well, now you just get to pick your Pokemon.
Hang on, my Squirtle.
I don't know. They can be sad too, AJ. They're complex.
Squirtle.
Yeah. So that's interesting. The bigger thing here is what's happening with Sword and Shield. They're not going to do like Ultra Sword and Shield or like Pokemon
Scabbard or something.
Which I almost am sad, but just because of the name. The weirdest one was when. X and Y, there was like no Z, even though there was a Pokemon who looked like a Z.
Yeah, I feel like they were going to and just didn't.
It's like, yeah, exactly. So instead, there's going to be an expansion pass. The first expansion is the What's the
crown?
Yeah,
the forest.
Yeah, it's something with ruins or something. That one's coming out spring.
June.
It's going to have kind of like a combat focus and stuff. And then the second one comes out in fall, and it's like this more
Tundra-themed
one. And both of them are going to add 200 Pokemon, like not new ones, but ones who weren't in the last one.
Addressing the whole Dexgate.
Right.
Or Dexit, excuse me.
Yeah. And it's going to include like some new like Gigantamax forms of some Pokemon, like a lot of the old legendary Pokemon. All the starter Pokemon's final forms are going to have Gigantamaxes, Venusaur and Blastoise, stuff like that. But like basically it's kind of like the kind of some of the content you might expect to be in like what would have been like Ultra Sword and Shield. But I think this kind of system works a lot better.
I like it. I mean, you know, it's
you don't have to buy a full game.
Yeah, man. And you're continuing your save. You're not starting over again, which is nice.
It seems a lot better. Plus, like these two areas are basically going to be kind of like new wild areas.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of my complaints of Sword and Shield was like I thought the wild area would be more of the game. So
you almost like don't have to do it.
Yeah, so I was a little disappointed that like at its core still like a pretty basic Pokemon game. So it's kind of cool. This is going to be what I thought the game was going to be, like just big open areas you explore. So that's neat. That should feel kind of nice.
But it's interesting that, like, you know, Sword and Shield is going to kind of have this relevancy going forward.
Relevancy?
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
Relevancy.
Relevancy. Thank you. Kind of going forward with this. So have you played too much of Sword and Shield?
No, I need to play more of it. I just...
got to get ready for the DLC.
Well, I got till June.
Yeah.
I guess.
Right. But yeah, I thought it's weird. It's like I didn't foresee them going down this route just because it's like unprecedented. But it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. Why not?
Like, exactly. Why not? So that's what Game Freak's going to be busy on for a bit. They didn't talk about Pokemon Sleep. Where's Pokemon Sleep?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. They say Pokemon Home is coming next month.
Right. But you think we're still going to get like a regular Nintendo Direct? We got to be getting one.
We're
soon.
Due.
Well, we honestly don't know too much about like what's coming out like
for the
this
next
year.
6 months.
Yeah, really. I mean, we have Animal Crossing.
Yeah, that's about it.
But and like there's like things we know are happening like Breath of the Wild 2 and like Metroid. But like we don't know very much about those things. So, yeah. And plus there's the last fighter for Smash Brothers. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. All right. Game of the decade. So what do you want to do here? You want to talk about like the most important game or
let's do our top five personal favorites.
Okay. Well, I wish I was prepared.
I texted you this on Monday.
What? I did not get that.
Well,
I can figure this out.
Okay. My top three were actually very easy. My top three. My next two I struggled with a little bit more. But I think I've got it.
Well, let's go reverse here for my sake, because I know my number one is.
Okay.
Okay?
Then you go first, then. What's your favorite game of the decade of the teens?
The game that I enjoyed the most this entire decade was Super Mario Odyssey.
Ooh.
I mean, that was the only game I've ever given a perfect score to at Games Beat. I loved that game from front to back. I went on, I 100%ed it, like, which just takes, like, more time than it does to play through it the first time. Just like absolute perfection, super fun to play the entire time, creative, charming. Everything about that game was fantastic.
And what a good game suited to the Switch, because it worked as both the thing you put in your TV and play for 6 hours, and also the thing that like you just pull out your Switch and handheld, and you're like, I'm going to get a moon.
Right, exactly.
It worked both ways.
Right, exactly. Like, when I was going through, like, kind of the first, like, go at it, I was playing a lot on the TV. Mm-hmm. Then when I was, like, 100%ing it and just, like, hunting down, like, moons, that was a lot more handheld mode stuff going on there.
Yeah.
Right, and just the whole Cappy, like, the movement with Cappy feels so good. Just, like, the way you can kind of, like, jump, throw him in the air, jump on him and bounce off and grab like a wall and jump off that, then like dive back towards like the new ledge. The movement just feels so good. And like you can get pretty good at it without being like some kind of crazy speedrunner.
Yeah.
But of course, like if you are a speedrunner, it's like
it's insane.
Yeah, watch the things they're doing. Super fun.
Do you think we'll get an Odyssey 2?
I think so, because it's like, again, we're talking about like what are they doing? Well, one of the things you could do relatively easily is a Super Mario Odyssey 2.
I'd be fine with that.
I mean, because, like, the Switch still has, like, you know, probably 2-3 years left on it, and you got to have that team do something. If you're doing Breath of the Wild 2, why the heck not?
Yep.
All right. What's your number one then?
Well, I know this is my favorite game of the teens because I bought it 5 times.
Skyrim.
It's Skyrim.
Yeah, I was gonna guess. I
Who
mean,
saw that coming?
It was such an omnipresent game,
right? I mean, from that first teaser trailer, it was like, oh, okay, this is gonna be sweet. Like, I my history with the Elder Scrolls games was like, I bought Oblivion because it like just looks so good. You're like, oh, what's this about? And I had no idea what I was doing. Never got very far in it, but I played a ton of it. Then Oblivion came as like, you know, it was like the big kind of launch title for the 360, and I played a ton of it, beat it, actually like got through the whole thing. So by the time like Skyrim was hitting, I was like, okay, I know what an Elder Scrolls game is. I'm a fan of the franchise now, sticking in my veins. And just so much of that game was just done right. Like, it was just exciting to explore. The combat felt good. The world was interesting. And then the dragons were just so much fun to fight. The way they implemented the dragons in that game, how they were like, they would randomly appear. They all had like unique identities. The way you had to fight them to build up your collection of shouts and everything. It was just such a good system. And there's a reason that you can still play this game 9 years later. Well, closer to 8, mm-hmm. but you know what I mean? You know, aside from, you know, the modding community has obviously always been very good to these games, and the special edition kind of gave it a nice pop. But it's just a fun game to dink around in. And for as much as I've played it, I'm not even close to seeing everything still, which is kind of crazy to think.
Right. I mean, the game has really just it still hasn't aged all that much, even though it's going to be 9 years old later this year. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I mean, everybody seems to have played it at some way or right. another at this point. It really did kind of like bring Elder Scrolls into, like, I don't know, kind of an epitome of some sort. Right.
It very much was the mainstream one. Like, Oblivion got them into that conversation. Mm-hmm. But this was like the game that, like, okay, everyone knows what Elder Scrolls is now.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it's great on the Switch, actually. Yeah, I mean, shockingly, I can't believe it like works on that system. Mm-hmm. The VR version's very fun. I hear it's not great on PSVR just because like it looks like mud.
Sure.
But you know, on my PC with Oculus.
What about that Alexa version?
I've never actually tried that. I guess I should.
Yeah.
But yeah, in VR, if you're playing it, I haven't tried it with like a sword or anything, but as a spellcaster, very cool. Yeah, very, very cool. So, yeah, too bad. Turns out Jeremy Soule is a terrible rapist.
Yeah.
But, you know, otherwise the music's real good.
All right. I guess my number two would probably Overwatch, which is a game I played an absolute ton of this decade. Aside from World of Warcraft, probably the most I played a game. Still playing it. I was just playing it right before you got here, actually. Mm-hmm. It's funny because you almost kind of take for granted now because I've been playing it for like 3 years, like, how good that game looks and how great like the animations are and the art style and the characters and stuff. But we grew up with like Team Fortress Classic, then played some Team Fortress 2. And I love those kind of team based, like kind of like unique character class based games like that. And that's like exactly what this thing is going for. It's a bit more of a like a slight MOBA influence to it, just in terms of, like ability cooldowns. Yeah.
It's so interesting how, you know, suppose this came from the ashes of Titan.
Yeah, like some weird
but it does feel like they set out to be like, okay, Valve's not doing it. What would it look like if we made Team Fortress 3?
Right.
Like that's so much what it feels like when you play it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to jump around, but this is my number 5, actually, on my mental list here. For much the same reasons you say. The other thing about this game I really like that few games get correct is just the world building they do. From that first trailer with Winston and Tracer in the museum with those kids and Widowmaker and Reaper show up, like something about that trailer, like the music and the art style and the personality, like I was immediately drawn into that world. And that the Overwatch 2 trailer that we saw debut at BlizzCon, I mean, I was like fist pumping at the end of it. It's just too good. So they really have nailed that part of it. So I'm very excited for Overwatch 2.
Exactly. And it seems like it's going to be a game I'm going to be playing for like a lot of this decade going forward. So, all right, what's your
number two is a similar game to my first one, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
I'm like trying to figure out if this is like on my list.
I am ready to declare it my favorite Zelda of all time.
I guess that's my, and I mean, I don't mean to jump in like what I don't like about it, but I would like still like some kind of more, maybe they don't necessarily be dungeons, but something more like that.
I understand.
Like larger, like
I understand that
area.
Complaint.
And
I guess
the bosses are were a little weak to me.
I guess it didn't bother me just because the world itself was so compelling to explore.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. That stuff was so good. Like, the world
between
stuff
that and the chemistry
shrine,
systems
right,
in the game.
Right, exactly. Like, the way the systems-based gameplay combined with, like, the giant open world, like, playground, it is done so phenomenally well.
Yeah. And then some people kind of knock it. I like the way how it told the stories with, like, recollected memories. Yeah. I thought that worked pretty well.
Right. I mean, there are some things people criticize about the game that I think are dumb like that. And people who get upset about the durability system, I think, are just
no,
weirdo.
See, that's the thing. I like that system. I mean, it's frustrating in the moment. But what I appreciate about that system, especially early on, it forces you to adapt and try new weapons.
Right.
Otherwise, if it didn't do that, you'd get the best sword you could find and just never do anything else.
Right.
You're forced to adapt.
I mean, that's
adapt.
Like, this isn't like a Skyrim RPG, right? Or, mm-hmm. You know, like a Final Fantasy. It's not just, oh, you got this sword, equip it. It has +5 more attack than the other one.
Right.
And I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
That it's not just doing the same exact thing as everything else.
It engenders improvisation throughout the game. Maybe you don't have a sword at all. What are you going to do?
Right.
You know, you're trying to throw bombs in the barrels. You're trying
using
to...
Using a boomerang as a
yeah,
melee weapon.
Exactly.
Like, you kill the one guy because you see he has a club, so you can just use that a bit to get the other
you
guys
sneak
for
in
a while.
And steal their weapons. Now they go to get their weapons, right. Realize they're gone, they're defenseless. Right. Like,
but towards the end
so
of the game, your
options.
Inventory is so big, and you have so many weapons that you're pretty much fine. You have the Master Sword, which you can use quite a bit, mm-hmm. So...
And again, incredible soundtrack. Most of it is very minimal. So it's not the kind of thing you like listen to in your car,
right.
But in the game, it all works so, so well. And there are still plenty of really, really strong themes. I love the Rito Village music, both night and day.
See, my favorite song is like
that trailer.
The trailer song.
And that is, again,
it feels like
going along with Skyrim, one of the all-time great trailers. I love that trailer.
Right, right.
So, yeah, again, very pumped to see what they do with Breath of the Wild 2. I mean, I feel like if Breath of the Wild 2 is Breath of the Wild, but with some more traditional dungeons in there, you possibly have the perfect video game. Like, yeah. Like, what else do you want?
All right. Well, my number three is Ori and the Blind Forest.
Me too. Hey, we crossed up.
There we go. I mean, gosh, that game was just, it's still like the most beautiful 2D game I've ever seen.
Like when we were playing like a stall and you wonder, where could this go? That's where it goes.
Right. And just the Metroidvania movement is so much, especially once you get that bash ability where you can kind of like grab enemies mm-hmm. or projectiles.
Oh, yeah, like launch off of them. Oh, it's bouncing. So good.
And like combine that with like those kind of like those like escape sequences and the Ginzo tree and the water and like there's a lava coming. It's like,
and again,
oh,
you talk about good soundtracks.
Yeah, there's a soundtrack.
That might be the best one of the decade, honestly.
It's so nice, so pretty, and oh. But I mean, I loved it when I played it first time, and I redid it just on Switch a little bit ago.
It's on sale. I might get it.
Oh, it's great. Oh.
I might get it and play it again on Switch.
Especially when it's your second playthrough, it's like it's actually a pretty breezy playthrough. I even did it on hard mode.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like,
well, the combat wasn't the major challenge in the game, so I'm curious to see where that goes in Ori 2.
Well, that's what kind of one of the big things they're doing is that there's actual like you have like a like an
weapons,
you have weapons and like actual combat abilities. Mm-hmm. It's not just like that homing attack sort of thing.
Again, what's the deadline on spoiling this game? Are we there yet?
Ori? Oh, I think we're fine on Ori.
Okay, Ori spoilers coming up, I guess. So I think I've told this story before in the show, but I was getting close to beating the game. And it was St. Patrick's Day, and we thought the twins were going to be born that day. Like, we were at the hospital, and this nurse is telling us, yeah, it's probably happening, but you didn't hear that from me. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then they sent us home. So then I went home, and I was all, like, pumped up on adrenaline, so I couldn't sleep. I'm like, well, I'm going to go play Ori. I think I'm close to the end. And, you know, you get to the end bit where Ori's kind of cornered by the owl, and Neru wakes up. You thought she was dead, and she's trying to save Ori, and then you find out that the owl is being a dick because it was trying to save its babies, and you realize the whole story of the game is like parents protecting their children, and I'm sitting here in my basement just like crying playing this game, like beating it, and then the next day the kids were born, and I was like, huh, okay. So yeah, quite the emotional wallop.
Yeah.
So good. What a good game.
Right.
And like, what a unique situation. Like that development team's completely remote. They're spread across the world.
Right, Moon.
Like, how does that work?
I know.
How does that work?
Conville or Slack, man.
Yeah, what an achievement. I mean, just an incredible game. And to talk about, like, the Metroidvania genre, aside from, like, Super Metroid and Symphony of the Night, it is the best one.
Yeah, it's number three, I think.
I think I'd put it above Symphony of the Night. I think Supernatroid still owns the crown. I'd rather play, you know, gun to my head, I'd rather play Ori than Symphony.
I mean, all three of those do different things better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the movement in Ori is incredible. The exploration in Super Metroid is fantastic. And the kind of, that action RPG and the bosses in Symphony of the Night are incredible. So,
I guess I'd rather climb the tree than fight death.
Yeah, I like fighting death.
I like fighting death, too.
I like fighting
death. But I like getting out of that tree.
Right. You know, which game kind of has a bit of everything, though.
What's that?
Which you like. I'm not saying it's on my list. It might be. Was freaking Hollow Knight, if you want to talk about another amazing Metroid. I don't understand.
I need to play more of it.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
You guys are driving me crazy.
I know. Like I said, I played it for like 2 hours, and I was like, this isn't doing it for me, and I just never went back to it.
It's so good. All right, but my actual number four is Red Dead Redemption.
Ooh, okay.
The first. And actually, I like 2 a lot. 2, like, takes a bit of growing.
I feel like as I've listened to kind of podcasts and outlets do their decade lists, everyone kind of goes to the original Red Dead with the, like, I mean, Red Dead 2 is real good, yeah. But...
Well, right, I mean... So, I mean, this was so much earlier. This is 2010. Mm-hmm. It's like you know, 9 years before Red Dead Redemption 2, or I guess 8 or whatever it was. That was 2018, huh? Red Dead.
Yeah.
Wow. And, I mean, at that point, just, like, its kind of cinematic quality and its storytelling seems so far ahead of a lot of things. Like, I was so relieved it wasn't just Grand Theft Auto with horses.
Right, yeah.
It was way more thoughtful and kind of... like,
I appreciate the ways it built off Red Dead Revolver.
Yeah, right.
Because let's not forget, it is a sequel.
But just like super, like, it was just so nice to have something like with that, a different feel. Wild West really wasn't done that much.
No, I mean, you have like the Call of Juarez games. Yeah. You had Red Dead Revolver, and that was it. Like Westerns were, you know, except for like going back to Mad Dog McCree, there's not a lot of Western games before this.
But just a lot of good characters. That moment where you go to Mexico and you're riding your horse for time, which you ruined because you fell off a cliff with your horse and the song reset.
I know. No, it didn't reset. It just skipped it. So awful.
So good. And you want to talk about like all-time great endings, which I can't even say because you still haven't beaten it.
No, and I still haven't had it spoiled for me, if you can believe it.
But man, just so good. That was such a memorable playthrough of a game was Red Dead Redemption 1. Still, and again, like... That's when I was like, oh, that was this decade.
Yeah. Hard to believe.
But it was. It was. All right. What's your number four?
All right. My number four, Mass Effect 2.
Oh, that was this decade.
That was.
That feels like forever.
Right? Though. Right?
My God.
But, I mean, you know, the trilogy as a whole, I loved the Mass Effect trilogy, like so much. But I think of them, 2 was definitely the best one. It had, I think, the best overall story. The way it did the loyalty missions for the companions was really well done. The suicide mission at the end was really cool. Thane Krios is one of my favorite characters of all time. Just everything about that game just totally worked for me. I loved it front to back.
It really was super, super funny. It was, it just, like, from, like, Mass Effect 1, I missed some of the more hardcore RPG elements, but, like, the gameplay just felt so much smoother.
Yeah, so much more
like,
refined.
It was the trade-off was kind of worth
it. I think Mass Effect 1, they were still trying to figure out what they were making,
mm-hmm.
and 2 is them figuring it out.
Right. What about 3?
3 is still very good. I'm not going to throw shade at it, you know, the whole ending controversy and everything. It felt a little bit like a rush to the finish.
Yeah.
I'm not, and I have this problem a little bit with 2. I hate the way they had to like reset why all your super close friends weren't with you anymore at the beginning of each game.
Yeah, right.
Like that was always felt a little contrived to me.
Well, 2, like it was kind of fun because like a big part of it was like
you died and came back.
Yeah, but so. It was like getting the band back together, right?
Yeah, there was an element of that.
And I'm almost like in like there weren't too many people you didn't bring back. I guess you didn't bring back Rex necessarily.
No, you can go see him.
You can see him because like Rex could be dead.
Yeah, he could be dead too.
There was
that.
And then there was and same thing with the. Actually, you could the guy and the girl. You could still have them in your party, huh?
I don't think they joined the party.
I think anybody who could have been dead, like
well, no, because they did join your party in 3.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, they just didn't because that was and that this is like again I'm sure I talked about this in the past. My favorite thing about how my Mass Effect trilogy playthrough played out. So I played Fem Shep because I originally started as Male Shep and my Xbox was stolen. So I had to start the game over. So wanting it to be different, I chose Fem Shep. So I went with Caden, the guy in the first game. Then he's like not even an option in two. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go with Thane. So I did that. And then like it turned into this weird love triangle in the third game. And then Thane died in the hospital. But like him and Caden became friends. And like he wrote you this nice letter and then you end up with Caden. I was like, wow, that like felt like that was the way they wrote it. Like it just played out perfectly. And I was like, these decisions I started making. When did Mass Effect 1 come out?
Oh, like 2000.
It was like late seven, late aughts. Yeah. So it's like these decisions I made from that point forward, like the way like that played out alone was like, wow, that's really cool. So, yeah.
What about Andromeda? Is Anthem number 5 Edge Guy?
No. No, I told you my number 5. It's Overwatch.
That's right. Oh, gosh. So,
what's your, are we done? Did you say 5? Four. Your 4 is Red Dead. What's your 5?
5 is, I was thinking about this because there's so many that it could be.
It's hard.
Like, it could be Smash Bros. Ultimate, which is like my favorite Smash Bros. Game since Melee.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Gravity Rush, which I just, man.
You love Gravity Rush.
I feel like, yeah. Like
you might be the world's biggest Gravity Rush fan.
I know. I feel like that game is just really underappreciated. It
probably is.
Especially, like, in 2 was great. But, like, 1, for being a Vita game.
Yeah. Really something. For
how much fun. Like, that's one of those games where, like, you sometimes hear criticism, you have no idea. And people are like, that game was confusing to control with, like, the gravity thing. Like, no. It was great.
No, it wasn't.
You push a button midair and you change it. Oh, that was so much.
Yeah, it was good.
It was, like, a better version. Of like with that Crackdown orb hunting kind of like
thing. Yeah, it did have some of that DNA.
Oh god, that would yeah.
But that's not your number 5?
I'm thinking. I guess it could be Hollow Knight, which gosh, that game is just super fun. It's super big. It like keeps getting bigger. Like well, expect it to be.
Go small. Over. What are like some PS3, 360, like no Uncharted games in your list?
Well, that's what I was saying. Uncharted 4 was incredible.
Right.
And I feel like I kind of like over. Like, look it a little bit. I don't know why, but because, like, I feel like I've talked so much about Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I stand Uncharted 2 so hard, but Uncharted 4, like, is certainly at least right behind it, if not maybe better than it. Like, that story was incredible. It definitely has, I think, the best, like, climax of all of them. And that was something, like, some of the Uncharted games would get, like, ripped on.
Mm-hmm.
But Uncharted 4, the whole thing of, like, going into that pirate ship and it's burning. You have that sword fight. Oh! And, like, the guy's going crazy. Oh, so good. But, like, the whole pirate feel of it. Guybrush Threepwood was there.
I know. Uncharted it's so good.
4 is so good. And then, you know, on the other side, you have The Last of Us. Which is another shame game for you for not beating, but that was a super emotional, super good game. But there's Fire Emblem Awakening, which was the game that really made me fall in love with Fire Emblem finally. And like Fire Emblem Awakening was like so out of nowhere and a surprise. And it could just be like Breath of the Wild. Maybe it is just Uncharted 4.
Though. I think it's Uncharted 4.
I liked Uncharted 4.
Uncharted 4 almost cracked my top 5. It was very, very close.
That's still, I think, like probably the best looking console game.
Well, you know how sometimes you're playing a game, and you're like, okay, I'm ready for this to be over.
Yeah,
I never felt that with Uncharted 4.
No,
that game could have gone on forever, as far as I'm concerned.
To be honest, the Lost Legacy was also really, really good.
Yeah.
But man, Uncharted 4 was super fun. Even like the vehicle segments were with the boat and then the Jeep.
Yeah, so I like the boat a lot.
That part where like the one thing where you're in that bell tower and that bell just keeps like falling.
Yeah, that was great.
I kind of want to play Uncharted 4 again. Uncharted 4
rules. Yeah, right. Talk about those. Have me kind of Jones and Ford.
Uncharted 4 absolutely ruled. I loved that game. So yeah, I'll say Uncharted 4.
There you go.
Number 5. I feel pretty good about that.
All right.
But it was a. It was a busy decade. There's a lot of things going on.
Okay. For sure. So let's do some superlatives.
No, no.
What do you think was the most influential game of the decade? Changed the industry, changed the way we play games, changed the way games interact with the world.
I mean, maybe Dark Souls.
That's good.
You know, and it just isn't even a game I played that much of. But
you know what? They made a Star Wars game cut from that cloth. So
a lot of games cut from that cloth. But now.
I think the fact that Star Wars came out of that, it says something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, mine's maybe a little bit of an easy answer, but I'd say Fortnite.
Yeah.
Again, to use the how did it affect Star Wars criteria, I mean, they did like have like a reveal of footage from the new Star Wars movie in that game.
Right. Yeah, like Fortnite. I mean, it sometimes the games become so big, though, they almost feel like oddly almost separate from the game industry. Like Minecraft. I know what you mean.
Well, yeah. And Minecraft, was that this decade?
It's confusing. Its official release was, but it was everyone was playing it in like 2009. Yeah. So.
And I feel like, and to some degree, and maybe this is us projecting, but it feels like the kids who started on Minecraft graduated to Fortnite.
Yes, I think
which
so.
Which attributes to its size and popularity. Because obviously, you know, it did not invent Battle Royale, so you can make an argument for things like PUBG or even going back further to H1Z1 or whatever.
H1Z1, wow.
But, you know, like I still remember there was a holiday party at my in-laws a couple years ago. What was it last year? I don't know, whatever. And somehow I ended up watching all the kids down in the basement where they were, like, watching TV. I mean, the kids went from age from my kids to, like, 10-year-olds. But they're all on their phones playing Fortnite.
Yeah.
And but because I knew what Fortnite was and could talk about them, all of a sudden I was the cool guy in the house. So like that was like kind of neat.
Right, right.
But yeah, then kids like Fortnite. It toes that line of like it's violent, but it's cartoony enough that no one seems to object to it. Like it is funny. I got the Kylo Ren skin. It is kind of funny to see like Kylo Ren with like an assault rifle running around.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
All right.
Also, like, I saw this article that kind of joked about this, how they are creating, like, the metaverse. Because right now you could have, like, Kylo Ren, Black Widow, Batman.
Yeah, I know.
Like, all fighting each other.
It's like a Lego game.
Exactly. Which is, you know, seems to be what they're turning into. So, all right. What do you think was the biggest news story of the decade?
News story?
Yeah.
Of the decade. I mean, what are you thinking of?
I'm trying to decide because, like, you know, we had console launches.
Right.
That's always big. We had controversies, you know, Blizzard.
Yeah, so like
it's doing all their nonsense.
Some of the controversies, really, stuff like what happened at Riot and other things like that.
Yeah, that was a big one too.
Like just all that kind of stuff. Sort of like the fact that like, or even just all the stuff about Crunch coming out. Some of the, I guess, the culture stories to me is what were really interesting. About how kind of going after Crunch, going after some of this discrimination and stuff like that. You know, there's specific instances of it with Riot and Rockstar and other people. Like that stuff was always kind of, I'm glad that stuff was getting talked about a lot more this decade.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think that's kind of a good call. Is, you know, people know what Crunch was 10 years ago. Now we kind of like when games are delayed, the community is actually like, yeah, good.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't kill anybody.
Yeah, just don't delay till this March. We have too many things there.
Yeah. So also the 10s, Mike, are kind of the decade you became a journalist yourself.
It's true, Lufu.
So of all the events you've attended,
oh god,
trade shows and private parties, what was the coolest, biggest one that you've been to, would you say?
Well, when did Epic Mickey come out?
I believe that
2010
qualifies. Yeah,
well, that was like the first one I went to. That year was Epic Mickey. It's funny because is that one my most recent one? We're both Disneyland events, and they're two of my favorites. The first one, though, I mean, I was so star-eyed and young, and I was working for a different company. We had more relaxed rules about like accepting travel, so I got to stay in the Disneyland hotel. They took us on a tour of Disneyland, like behind the scenes. And
you went to Walt Disney's apartment.
And I rode Space Mountain with Warren Spector. I made him sit next to me, which was all kinds of amusing. Then that was when Tron Legacy was coming out, and they had the Tron party at California Adventure, and we got it for ourselves. Like, first, it's like outside, it's like a dance party, and they're serving me Tron teenies, which I still make to this day for people now. And then, like, you go inside Flynn's Arcade, and that was just so much fun. Then recently, the Star Wars one was great because it was my first off, we got to play Jedi Fallen Order for like 4 hours at the nearby Marriott.
Yeah.
But then we got to go to Galaxy's Edge, and it was my first time there seeing it. And then at night, they just rented out all of Uga's Canteen for us. And
with an open bar.
With an open bar, which was a bit dangerous.
Because those drinks are strong.
They
are strong
drinks.
That
is the most drunk I had gotten in a long time. I'm a little ashamed to say. Yeah. the shout out to my friends out there who looked after me. I had one too many rocket juices. I think I already said that I bought
jet juice. Yeah.
Yeah, rocket juice. I bought the $80 flight thing and just left it there. I just and that's what I get. To be honest, like I went way too.
Yeah.
And the bar, like you know how it is when you're drink people, like they're all kind of pushing the drink board. The bartenders were kind of pushing. Like it's free, guys. I think because they were astounded by it. Like you know how much this usually costs. Drink.
Yes.
Oh. But I almost not like the one kind of surprisingly super fun event because it's such a weird game was the Fallout 76 event.
Yeah, because you were like texting me for that. You're like, I don't know about this game, but I'm having a good time. I'm in this like bunker.
Well, one thing I loved about it was that I was able to drive to the event because it was in West Virginia.
Yeah, how often does that happen?
I mean, it was an 8-hour drive, but compared, I'm always flying to California and stuff like yeah. that, you know? Like, sometimes when I go somewhere fun, it's like I go to France, but it's usually like a conference or I judge some mobile game thing. So, like, that itself is fun, but it's not like. Like, we were at this, this like, really old school style, like resort area. And the event was there because that's where the government secretly built the bunker for the legislative branch of the government. And, like, we had a party in that bunker.
Kind of fun.
Super fun. It was great. But, like, this whole resort was super nice and stuff like that, so. Yeah, so those are the three highlights.
Okay. Mine was BlizzCon.
I mean, BlizzCons are great.
Yeah, well, I did go to PAX East in 2010. That was our second one.
I love going to PAX East.
PAX East is great. Yeah, someday. We'll get back to doing that.
But I've been to three BlizzCons now.
BlizzCon was so much fun.
And they're always fun, interesting experiences in different ways. This last one was really cool because getting to play Diablo 4, getting to play Overwatch 2. And I always love watching the Overwatch World Cup. That is always super
fun.
Yeah,
that was a blast. That was my first really live esports event. Yeah.
But yeah, BlizzCon is always actually a really good time. I'm spoiled from it, from covering it for media. And now I'm going to worry about long lines and stuff. That's for sure.
Okay, so last one I kind of had. We're gonna do a very unfair thing.
Oh, no.
In these 10 years, we've played on a number of different devices and systems.
Oh, gosh.
Going from the Wii U to the PC and everything in between. What would you say is your personal favorite piece of hardware for gaming on over the course of the decade?
Oh, a Switch.
Yeah?
I was just thinking about it. I've almost certainly already played more on my Switch than I ever did on PlayStation 4. Xbox One. I guess PC is close too. I've done a lot of PC gaming.
This was the decade that I got back into PC gaming after kind of being off it a bit. I mean, I always had a PC good enough to like play World of Warcraft and you know, a few things. Right.
But I mean, honestly, even my PC gaming is so overwhelmingly dominated by like a few games, mostly Blizzard games. But like Switch, I'm playing all sorts of things right? And there's a big variety. I'm playing at least a bit of it almost every night.
Yeah.
So.
I think if you want to be a gamer but not have to buy everything, I think PC and Switch is the way to go.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Like you're just kind of missing out on like
PlayStation
exclusives.
Because the Microsoft stuff comes to PC.
So you're pretty much your basis covered with just that.
No love for the Wii U, Mike?
No.
That came and went this decade. Isn't that weird?
I'm thinking about it, because, like, especially, like, now, like even, like, some of, like, the obscure good games for it are coming out for the Switch. Like, what is that thing's legacy? Like, why would you need to have a Wii U? At this point, it's, like, for those enhanced versions of those two Zelda games.
Uh-huh.
Like, Mario
3D World.
And, like, Wonderful 101. Once, like, those four get ported, and I think they're going to.
Yeah.
It's like, what's like, unless you really want Mario Maker 1 or
something. Yeah, or Splatoon 1.
Right. And I mean, like, that's valid, and especially because Splatoon 1 had like a good campaign, but it's like, it's weird, man.
Yeah.
Like, that whole.
Like that system will just be kind of like kicked to the curb.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it wasn't a very good system. So.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's what you get. You're not going to ask me what the most disappointing game of the decade was?
I was getting to that.
Yeah? I thought you said, okay.
So what do you think, then?
Mighty Number 9.
Yeah?
Oh, come on. That game was awful. It wasn't just disappointing. It was, like, a legitimately terrible game. All that Kickstarter hype, man. All the Mega Man's coming back. Woo! And, ugh. It was crap. Thank God we actually got Mega Man 11, and it was great.
Yeah, that is true.
Mighty Number 9 was so bad. Looked ugly, played terrible, just way too much talking.
Yeah,
awful voice acting. Yeah. Just so bad, and it was delayed forever, and was still awful. Oh, I hated it. God, that was Yeah, gross. You know what I didn't think of? Maybe, gosh, maybe this was number five, is Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Maybe Shovel Knight was number five. Oh, so, and Undertale, so many good games. Gosh.
Yep.
Gosh.
Yep.
It could all be number five. All right, what else? What was your most disappointing game?
There actually? It is. Oh, gosh. Like, my gut wants to say Anthem, but it doesn't feel fair because I did play much of it.
You did play quite a lot of Anthem, didn't you?
Gosh, I'm trying to go, like, earlier in the decade. I'm trying to think. You know what? I'm going to... This is... Oh. Chris, get ready to get tilted.
Why? What is it?
It might be BioShock Infinite.
Well, I kind of get it.
Well, because... Okay, so it's not like it's a bad game. But what we were shown and what we originally pitched was going to, like, revolutionize everything. And so we got, like, a pretty good shooter campaign.
A very good shooter campaign. Yeah.
But, like... You know, like that first trailer, like he's like leaps off that ledge and hooks onto the sky coaster thing and he's zipping around. It's like, where's this going? This is this huge city. And then you play the game and you realize all these like sky coaster tracks, they're just a circle.
Yeah.
Like you're not going anywhere. Like it, everything felt very small as you were playing.
But I mean, it's like a halfway to like, you know, you're going from a kind of like a small. It's room to room. As long as the rooms are very big and they're outdoors. But, like, yeah, it's, you know, that, there's still a
yeah, like, that for sure. Like, he moved all over the place. There's so much dynamicism to it. That doesn't bother me
so much as the kind of, like, the theme shift in the middle.
Yeah, and that was my other problem,
too. First, I was like, oh, we're dissecting patriotism and how that's bad, maybe, and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, it's like, no, but it's about wacky timelines. And
yeah.
I'm like...
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, this is... And it. Like, this is all, like, surprising.
Yeah.
And it's, like, kind of interesting and, like, wait, what is going on here? But, like, kind of dumb, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, there's a little... I don't know. I wouldn't call it a disappointing game, personally. I still liked it a lot, especially playing through it the first time. But it is hilarious that they're just like, look, it's the things from Bioshock 1. They're tonics. We're not explaining how these are in this universe, but you can throw bees out of your hand.
Oh, they did explain.
It wasn't a very good explanation.
Yeah. The guy looked through the time rifts and saw them make the tonics and stole them, you see.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
That's why they had all the music.
The music, no, the best part.
The best part is watching that damn barbershop quartet.
That was incredible. But I'm saying, like that part, like all that kind of world building there was so much fun. Like just like when you're walking around the first time, that was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Bioshock, man, Bioshock 1 was last decade for sure, huh?
Bioshock 1 is when we started this podcast. That's right.
All right.
07.
Was there anything else?
I think that does it.
Yeah, that seems pretty good.
So what do we got to, real quick, we don't have to belabor this too much, for like this, so this decade, we know we got new consoles coming.
We got new consoles. We got...
What do you think? Is this like, are we going to, by the end of this decade, is like AR or VR going to finally be mainstream? Is that going to be
I think it'll
our
be,
interface?
It'll be a, no, it'll be a market. It'll be a thing, probably. It'll probably maybe be a little bigger than it is now. But I tell you what, it's more likely that it's dead than it's like the standard. Mm-hmm. I think it's most likely it's still just kind of like a thing that's around, a little niche.
Just and, it's hard to imagine. Like, what are we going to be playing in 2030?
Well, I mean, not... Yeah, right. Yeah. Probably a Mario game. Right? I mean, there's your bet.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
And it'll be fantastic.
It'll be fantastic.
It'll be great. We'll have this though. But yeah, I mean, it is strange just how like far removed we are getting from like when we like there seemed to be such like a linear path from the NES to where we are now, and there still is, but it's just the line is so long now. It's kind of hard to keep looking back.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff talked about this in his article about people going back to Witcher 3, but. A 10-year-old game now is very much relevant and playable. That wasn't always the case.
Right, right. You know? I mean, even like me who liked playing retro, like older games, like there was a giant difference. In 2006, you played a game from 1996. It was nothing like what was a modern game.
Yeah, it wasn't comparable.
Right. And now it's like. Like, you know, the next
Skyrim, you know,
it's games that are like Skyrim are still like Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like the next big Western RPG thing that comes out is going to be a lot like Witcher 3. Yeah, still,
I mean, play Red Dead right now. Right. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's perfectly fine.
So, yeah, that's interesting. And part of that is just, you know, the technology is it's getting better, but we're not creating new genres as much anymore. When we do create genres, it's like. It's like a twist. Oh, this is a shooter, but instead there's 100 and you're the last one standing. Or yeah. It's an action RPG, but like, you know, death matters more and the combat's slower. Right? So it's not like, here's the open world game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like we had in like 2001. It was like, oh.
Yeah, Grand Theft what now?
Right. So, I don't know. Maybe something super transformative is still on the way that I can't even understand or predict. But right. It certainly just seems like we're going to be getting more video games for a while.
That's fine. That is true. That's good.
It's fine.
That's good.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Exploding Barrel Podcast, everybody. You can find more of us at ebpodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Penny knows that we're done. We're going to be recording the episode of 90s Disney Scene. We're going to record today that Chris's family had a pink eye outbreak.
Yeah, we didn't want that in here. So.
Right, so he's quarantined. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast.
Bye-bye.